Gopinashaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giti Govardhanaki Jai Vrindavan Dhamaki Jai Mathura Dhamaki Jai Rupati Mayapur Dhamaki Jai Jagannathpuri Dhamaki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Hare Krishna Sarva Krishna Devam Swamitam Nama Sai Saraswati Devi Nama Tam Nama Sikhsis Nama Pasati Apsalami Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakama Sri Guru Vaishnava Vishta Sri Rupam Sabradatam Sahagana Vagayatam Vitam Stam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Krishna Asaita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vagita Sri Vishakam Vitam Stam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we're here in Honolulu, May 24th, 2009. It is tomorrow, Memorial Day. And here we have a day in America when people are supposed to be giving homage to anybody who's died for their country. Of course, it's doubtful that very many people think about that. They probably think about a day to go to the beach or shopping or hang around and watch television. But the original idea is that if someone gives their life, well, they can't really give their life, can they? What are they giving? Their body. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. When the body dies, the soul doesn't die. But they're giving up their body, and generally, what's most dear to us is our body. Right? People can give so many things, their wealth, their home, their time, their energy. But how many people will give their own body for a higher cause? And therefore, we have the stake to commemorate them. You know, it's odd because modern philosophy of evolution says, what was the basic idea of evolution? It's the survival of the
fittest,
which means that there's always a competition for survival. And the idea of the evolutionist is that there's basically a competition not only between species, but even within the species. I mean, their whole conception is that life started out just some random electricity was flowing through a low oxygen atmosphere and hit a soup full of different chemicals and there was a cell, which is sort of interesting. And then that cell gradually evolved to become, well, us. So that means that their idea is, even within a species, you know, some lizard who somehow or other was able to be warm-blooded had better ability to survive than the lizards who were cold-blooded, and therefore some lizard turned into a bird, which gradually turned into so many other creatures. So their idea is that it's competition and selfishness that drives all of existence. And they say that this competition and selfishness has made things get better and better. I mean, most evolution scientists would say that the Earth is a lot better now than it was in the so-called age of the dinosaurs, or the days when there was just protozoans swimming around, and that their ideas were going to keep making progress. So their idea is that the whole essence of progress is selfish competition. If I'm stronger than you, I take the resources and you don't get any, and so you die out. And so if I have some factor that enables me to grab resources at your expense, well, then that's good. I have good qualities and those will reproduce and we'll go on to have a more competent type of being. Therefore, by their philosophy, the fact that we here in America, who have 5% of the world population and are taking 50% of the world resources, is just fine. Why shouldn't the less competent people in the rest of the world die out from starvation while we hog everything? That's the whole principle of evolution. And we do see, in fact, that in this material world, people tend to be selfish. We see that people will even cheat their friends for a small amount of money, isn't it? People will put their parents in an old age home just because they don't want to bother taking care of them. Obviously, sometimes even if you want to take care of your family, you may not be able to. Or women will have abortions just so they won't have to take time out of their career. It's very common for people to sacrifice even their near and dear ones for the sake of their own convenience. And that makes a lot of sense according to evolutionary philosophy. But then we also see this other peculiar thing. Here we see a peculiar thing that people are willing to sacrifice their body for the sake of their country. Why? And it's not just that people die for the sake of their country. On Memorial Day, we're supposed to remember the people who died. But not only giving up their body in death, people give up their body to dismemberment. If you're a soldier, you're as likely to lose your arm or your leg or your vision or your ear or your brain's capacity to think as you are to die. And young people will sign up for the military and willingly put themselves in that sort of danger. Most of us probably wouldn't be willing to do that to attain Krishna consciousness. If we said, okay, in order to attain Krishna consciousness, you have to be willing to lose your sight, lose your arm, lose your leg, lose your ability to think, sign up now. But people do that for the military. Everybody knows that's the risk that they're taking. And it may not even be for such a good cause. I mean, who knows, really? Who can say if fighting in Iraq or Afghanistan is really contributing to the freedom of us here in America? I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And for an uncertain goal, they're willing to sacrifice literally their right arm. Why? Why do people do that? And why do people sacrifice for their family? As many women who are killing their unborn babies, there are so many more women who are sacrificing their time and energy for their children. So many men who are going out and working 2-3 jobs to put their children through college. People who give up their comfortable life to go to a part of the world where there's war or there's disease to sacrifice to help others. Why does that happen? I mean, according to modern evolutionary philosophy, that shouldn't be happening at all. Nobody should ever be sacrificing their own comfort to save someone who's weaker. But that does happen. Why? Now, it's an interesting thing, though, that we're sort of torn between these two desires. We have a desire, ultimately, to take care of ourselves, even at the expense of our other relationships, even at the expense of our country, even at the expense of anything. We have a tendency to want to put ourselves first. And we also have this tendency to be willing and wanting and looking for sacrificing ourselves for a greater cause. And what we tend to do is go back and forth between these. We tend to spend some time just being selfish and self-centered and then not really feeling very satisfied with that. And thinking, what kind of meaning does my life have if all I'm doing is taking care of myself? After all, there are even many animals that sacrifice themselves for the greater good of their species. The honeybee who will give up its life to save the hive. So then we think, all right, let me sacrifice. And we sacrifice for our spouse. We sacrifice for our children. We sacrifice for our company. Or we sacrifice for our country. But then what happens after we sacrifice generally? We feel what? Often disappointed. You know, the wife decides, all right, I'm going to cook a really special meal for my husband today. I'm not going to, you know, do the things I wanted to do. I'm going to spend 4 hours in the kitchen. And her husband comes home and he just says, oh, I had a miserable day at work. I'm just going to go watch television and play. She says, well, I just spent 4 hours cooking for you. Yeah, doesn't look very good. This happens all the time. You sacrifice for somebody. And Prabhupada gives the example of Gandhi, who sacrificed for his country and was assassinated by one of his countrymen. So at least one person in the country wasn't appreciative. And generally, the people for whom we sacrifice, they're not so appreciative. So I'm sure that there are many soldiers right now walking around without, you know, an arm, or in a wheelchair without a leg or without an eye, and they don't think that our celebration of Memorial Day really compensates them for their sacrifice. Or in the Vietnam War, people would come back from Vietnam with so many injuries, and they were just spit at and harassed. Even though in those days it was a draft, you had to go fight. It wasn't a volunteer army. So we sacrifice, and then we don't get the reciprocation that we want. We give our time, we give our energy, and the people, the causes, the country for whom we gave our energy doesn't always appreciate us. So then we say, okay, I'm just going to take care of number one then. I'm just going to take care of myself. Forget about doing something for my wife. Forget about doing something for my country, for my company. I'm just going to take care of myself. And we do that for a while, and then we say, this is really very satisfying. All right, let me give. And then we give, and we think, all I do is get burned. I don't find what I'm looking for. And we go back and forth and back and forth. This is called in Sanskrit bhogatyaga. We try to take care of our own enjoyment, bhoga, and then we sacrifice for others, tyaga, and we keep going back and forth without finding satisfaction. Now suppose we could find something that combined complete 100% selfishness and taking care of ourselves and doing the best for ourselves and focusing in ourselves and satisfying all of our own needs and complete total sacrifice. Many, many thousands of years ago, when Krishna came to this planet, he was in Vrindavan with his cowherd boys and his calves. He was there as a very little boy, of course. He has many, many forms. Actually, God is not changing, but he appears in different moods in different ways. So he appeared as a little boy, taking care of his calves and cows. And one of the devas, one of the celestial beings, Lord Brahma, he decided, I wonder if this is really God. So he stole the boys and the calves. And he put them into mystic slumber in a cave. At which point Krishna said, well, I don't really want to go back to Vrindavan. I don't want to go back to the village without the boys and the calves. That will be very distressing for their parents. So he expanded himself, and he took the form of each of the boys and each of the calves. Now, during the whole year that Krishna did this, the parents of the children and the calves became more attached to Krishna in the form of their children than they had been to their own children. And the person who was hearing this story, King Parikshit, said, how is that possible for someone to be more attached to Krishna than to their own offspring? And Sukadeva Goswami answered. He said, all of us are attached to our community, our country, our society, our family, but we're attached to them because they're expansions of ourself. I'm attached to my parents because I feel like my parents are part of my body, because they are. The same with my brothers and sisters. And I feel like the people of my country, they have some similarity with me. They have some connection with me on the bodily platform. So I have some attachment to them. But he says, ultimately, my attachment is for myself, in the form of this body. Ultimately, I'm more attached to this body, and I'm attached to all these other things because they're connected with this body. So I'm more attached to the I than I am to the my. Just like possessions. You know, if your house burns down but you escape, you don't say, oh, I rather would have been burned on half of my body and kept my possessions. Right? Everyone's more attached to their body than to their possessions. In the same way, we're more attached to our own body even than to the bodies of our near and dear. And he says, beyond the body, we're really attached to the self. The Atma, the soul. And then he says, just like we're more attached to the self within the body than just the body, we're more attached to the self of the self. Prabhupada translates this word as super soul or super self, the self of the self. So we're most attached to ourselves in terms of family and community, to the body. We're most attached to myself more than to the body. And then I'm most attached really to the self of the self, which is Krishna. So if I sacrifice for Krishna, I'm sacrificing for the self of the self. I'm sacrificing for my deepest self. He's the soul of my soul. And because I'm part of Krishna, see, I normally think if I sacrifice for the family or the country, because I think I'm part of them. I think I'm part of my family. And if I serve my whole family, I'll also be benefited. Or I'm part of America. Therefore, even if I give up my right arm for my country in war, or I even give up my body for my country in war, I'll be benefited because I'm part of America. But I really am part of Krishna. I'm genuinely part of Krishna. And therefore, if I sacrifice for Krishna, I become benefited. I'm trying to do that in a perverted way, materially. Therefore, if I sacrifice for Krishna, I'm giving completely and I'm gaining completely at the same time. It's the most selfish thing that one can do and the most selfless thing one can do together. Whereas materially, I either have to be selfish or selfless, and neither one of them fully satisfies. When I'm being selfless, I'm thinking, okay, when am I getting something back? I'm giving, when am I going to get? And when I'm getting, I'm thinking, when am I going to get to give? This isn't really much fun. So this is the secret of yoga. And this is because Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, we're both one with Krishna and different from Krishna. Now some places emphasize the oneness. But if there's only oneness, I can't really give. And some places emphasize the difference. But if there's only difference, how am I fully satisfied? So both are there, the oneness and the difference. I'm completely one with Krishna. Therefore, when I sacrifice my body, my mind, myself to Krishna, I'm sacrificing to myself. I'm one with him. But because I'm completely different from him, when I'm sacrificing to him, I feel that bliss of relationship and giving. So, of course, there's many examples of people, again, because Memorial Day is about sacrificing your body for your country, who gave their body to Krishna. The most famous example, perhaps, is of Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj was a king in ancient time, and he wasn't just a king of this planet. You know, nowadays there's all sorts of science fiction movies and television shows about interplanetary travel, but in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we actually hear also many stories of interplanetary travel, interplanetary living. And Bali Maharaj had conquered the higher planets. He was the emperor of the universe. He really was the emperor of the universe, not just like some science fiction tale. But he had occupied the universe by, well, he didn't even have to engage in war. It was really just through his pleasing of the brahmanas. At the same time, he had really usurped the position sort of illegally. He wasn't really supposed to be running things. So the Lord himself appeared as a little boy, little dwarf, Vamana, and came to Bali and said, "My dear Bali, I would like some charity." And in those days, the kings would naturally give charity to saintly persons. So Bali said, "Okay, whatever you like." He was just a little boy. He said, "I'd like 3 steps of land." And Bali said, "Well, what are you going to do with just 3 steps of land? You know, you can't really even live on that. Hey, I'm the emperor of the universe. I can give you such a benediction that you will never have to ask for anything else from anyone else ever." And of course, only God can say that. But Bali was saying that. And Vamandev said, "You know, if I can't be happy with 3 paces of land, I won't be happy with anything. Hint, hint, Bali. Your greed is never going to be satisfied." And Bali said, "I'd like to give you this and this." He had a whole list of things. And then he said, "Okay, if that's all you want, that's what I'll give you." Then Vamadeva expanded himself to cover the whole universe. The sun and the moon were his eyes, the lower planets were on his feet, middle planets on his knees. And just taking 2 steps, he covered the whole universe. Padanakanera Janita Janabhavana. His toe broke through the covering of the universe, and the Ganges, which is celestial water, came down to this planet. He said, "My dear Bali, now I've taken 2 steps, and everything in the universe has been covered by my body and by my steps. Now what?" And then Bali said, it's a long story, but finally he said, "You know what? the possessor of wealth is worth as much or more than the wealth. So you've taken all my wealth, but you haven't taken me. Why don't you take me? And he put his head, and Vamandev stepped on his head. And Balimarjan, explaining his decision to give everything to the Lord, said, you know, we're going to lose everything at death anyway. Why not give it to the Lord during this life? Now, Bali, by giving everything to the Lord, including his body, of course, he didn't leave his body as the soldiers do, but he said, Manasadeha Geha Yogachua, Arpilutua Parinandakishore, my mind, my home, my body, I give to you. What Krishna did, and we talked about this last time on Mother's Day, is whatever he gave, he got back. He actually got a residence on another planet that was more opulent than what he had previously, and the Lord stayed with him as a servant, as his doorkeeper. Another example of someone who gave his body, and actually did give up his body, was a great sage named Dadichi. Dadichi had been performing meditation on the Lord, and he particularly was chanting this mantra called the Narayana Kavacha, which is a sort of mystic shield. And the demigods and the demons were fighting, as they often do. People think if they go to heaven, it will be all peaceful, but there are demons even there that attack. And the demons were attacking, especially one Vitrasura, who wasn't really a demon, but that's a whole other story. And so the demigods went to the Lord and said, protect us, Pahimam, 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 please protect us. And the Lord said, really, you should be asking for pure devotional service. But okay, I have this devotee, Dadichi. And because he's been chanting this mantra, his whole body has become like a weapon. So why don't you ask him to voluntarily die, and then you can make a weapon out of his bones. And that weapon will destroy any demon. So the devas, in Western terminology, they'd probably be called archangels, they went to this yogi Dadichi and they said, the Lord has asked us to ask you for your body. Could you imagine that? Somebody comes up to you, excuse me, I just had a conversation with the Lord, and he said, can you give me your body? We have some, you know, gangsters outside, and he said we can make a nice weapon out of your bones. Is that okay? So first Dadichi said, don't you know that everybody's really attached to their body? I mean, how is it you're asking me for my body? And don't you know that death is usually rather painful? Haven't you heard about this pain? You're asking me to go through the pain of death and give up my body? And the deva said, one should sacrifice one's body even for a higher cause. So then the Dadichi was very satisfied. He entered into a mystic trance, meditated on the Lord, and he didn't even notice that he separated from his body. He just assumed his spiritual form to associate with the Lord eternally and left his body there. And the devas then made a weapon out of his bones. So that was a real sacrifice of his body. Now, generally, when we say we sacrifice our body for Krishna, we don't mean that we have to die and someone's going to use our bones to make a weapon. That's a pretty rare instance. Usually when we say we sacrifice our body, it means like Bali Maharaj. We say, my dear Lord, whatever you want to do with this body, you can. Now, I have a little secret, and that is we really don't have absolute control over what happens with this body anyway. I mean, what is our hesitancy of giving our body to Krishna? Because I'm thinking, it's my body. And if I give it to Krishna, he might ask me to do something with it that I don't like give my bones to the demigods or something. And, you know, it might be a little inconvenient for me. And therefore, you know, I want to retain control so that I can, you know, do what I like. Do we have that control? Do I have control over whether or not I'm going to have both arms by tomorrow? Do I have control over that? No, I don't. I could get some disease in the next minute and lose control over my whole body. And there's nothing I can do about that. I can have, you know, live in America and have the greatest medical system in the world. And still, do I have control over whether I have my mental faculties? No. Don't we all know of people who in an instant have lost the use of their body or even their mind? smart people, competent people, strong people. You know, you can go lifting those weights and running every day and eating all your vitamins and eating only organically grown food, tree-ripened, picked in season in Hawaii, grown in your own backyard or bought from the farmer's market. You still get hit by truck. I mean, I don't really have control. So when I surrender to Krishna, what it really is I'm acknowledging what's already existing. I'm simply accepting the truth that this body belongs to him. How do we know that whose property something is? They can take it whenever they want, right? Just like if you're renting. My children experienced this in India. They were renting and the landlord came and said, "Oh, you got to move out in 4 days." Well, what can you do? I mean, even here in America, how much can you do if your landlord says sorry? You know, you can go to court. Maybe you'll win, maybe you won't. And if the government wants to take your place, eminent domain, you know, the government can take your place. And the Supreme Court ruled a couple years ago, I think. They can even take your place to build a mall. It used to be they could just take your place to put up a highway or something. It had to be for the public good. And they do have to pay you for it. But, you know, they can pay you what they want. Maybe you get $300,000 selling your house on the open market. They can pay you $30,000 to build a mall. So who owns it? The person who can take it away is the one who owns it. You can say, "It's my house." And the government will say, "Sorry." So one can say, "It's my body." Krishna will go, "Hey, you know, Bhumirla Panalo Vayu. All the elements of your body belong to me." In fact, not only do they belong to him, they are him. Maya tatamyan sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matsani sarvabhutani nachaham te suvasitaha. It's all Krishna. Say, "Sorry, I want it for another purpose. You know, I'd like to use your body for potting soil right now. Sorry." There you go. He can take the mind, he can take the body whenever he wants. Or any part of it, or any function of it. So surrender is just simply saying, "You know, Lord, it already belongs to you. You can already do with it what you like. You already are doing with it what you like. I don't have any kind of supreme control." Why not just admit that and be cooperative? Now, of course, to admit that and be cooperative means I have to have some trust that Krishna's a nice person, that he's suvardham sarvabhutanam, that he actually has my welfare at heart, that he's not going to take my body just to build a mall to make money, like the government may do. He's not going to send me off to Iraq to fight a war just for Lord knows what purpose and ask me to give my right arm just for some political purpose. That whatever he asks from me, well, just like I was saying, when I surrender to Krishna, I'm also doing my own self-interest. And whatever surrender Krishna asks of me is also ultimately for my benefit. Because he doesn't need anything. He's already complete. Just like a loving parent asks their child to sacrifice for the benefit of the child. We say to the child, "My dear child, please sacrifice your desire to play with your Legos and go to school." Right? Why? For the benefit of the child. There are a few, but there aren't too many careers that you can prepare for by playing with Legos. A few, I guess. Working for the Lego company and building Legoland. But generally speaking, if you want to have a nice adult life, you've got to put the blocks aside and do your math and write your compositions. So the sacrifices that Krishna asks of us are also for our benefit. It's a loving thing. Now, how do I sacrifice, actually not just the body, although in this world we think the body is the most dear thing that we own. We're the most hesitant to sacrifice our body. But not only our body, but our mind. Manmana Baba Mad Bhakto, Madhati Mam Namastu, Mame Vashashi Yuktainam, Atmana Mad Pranayana. Give me your mind, Krishna says. Give me your body. Namas Namtas Chimam Bhakta. Offer your obeisances to me and give me your mind. And ultimately, he's asking for our very self. So how do we do that? Let's look at body, mind, self. How do I give my body to Krishna? Work for him. I have to work anyway. Krishna says everybody has to do some work to maintain their body. Nobody can live without working. Even thieves work. Sometimes thieves work harder than honest citizens, and they have a lot more anxiety too. Everybody has to work. Everyone has to do something. Even if you just like walk into the welfare office and back, you got to do something. So whatever work we're doing, do for Krishna. Yat karoshi yat adnasi yat dahoshi dadasiyat yat tapasyasi kanteyas tat karushva madalpanam. Whatever work you're doing, dedicate it to Krishna. A few things you can't dedicate to Krishna. You can't run a liquor store for Krishna. You can't run a prostitution center for Krishna. You can't run a gambling casino for Krishna. But generally, whatever work you're doing, you do for Krishna. Even if you're doing something sinful, you can still think about Krishna. One devotee I was talking to the other day told me that when he was first coming to Krishna consciousness, he would offer his LSD to Krishna. He said, and within 2 weeks, he lost the desire to take LSD. So Prabhupada says that the alcoholic, they can think when they're drinking the alcohol, this taste is Krishna. So even if you're doing some nonsense, even remember Krishna even in your nonsense. But ideally, one should at least give up meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. But then whatever you do, offer it to Krishna. Think about Krishna. Think about how Krishna is your ability, your intelligence. Krishna is the ingredients that you're manipulating. Then use your talents and your abilities to glorify him. Use whatever money you earn in his service. Use the friendships that you create in your work in his service. And how else do we offer our body to Krishna? Eating prasadam. That's so simple. I mean, there are so many people in religious disciplines just fast. Of course, we fast sometimes too, but or they'll eat very austerely all the time. When you read about these medieval monks that just lived on unsalted bread and soup. That's all they ever ate. Every day. All day. They're only meals. But we're saying, eat wonderful food that you offer to Krishna. Prasadam is pretty good, isn't it? Eat Krishna prasadam. Only eat prasadam. So that may be an austerity in the modern age, when everybody wants to go to restaurants and buy fast foods. But prasadam is very nice. How else can you offer your body to Krishna? Chanting. I'm going to sit down a certain amount of time every day and just use my body to chant Krishna's names. Even though there may be so many other things I want to do. Really, without doing that, how can you have a relationship with someone? If you want a relationship as just listening to a podcast by Shiva Ramaraj, and he was talking about in householder life, that someone was suggesting householders should chant at least 32 to 64 rounds every day. And he was saying that, you know, if you're going to have a 9-to-5 job, which means you leave the house at 7:30 and get back at 6:30, and then you also have to spend time with your family. Right? You have to spend if you want to have a nice relationship between husband and wife, you have to spend some time together. You want a nice relationship between parents and children. You have to spend some time together. You want a nice relationship with your friends. You have to spend time with them. You want a nice relationship with Krishna. Guess what? You got to spend some time with him. Just him. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of frustrated marriages where the guy's just... Yeah, sure. Is it on? It's not on. I didn't feel like putting an unturned on mic in front of me. So I was just waiting. I don't know how to do this.
He'll teach us.
Sorry, just... No, it's no problem. So I'm sure there's a lot of frustrated marriages because, you know, the woman wants to talk to her husband and he's just there watching the football game. And she's trying to have a conversation and he's just saying, oh, look, they just got up to the zero line and then... And he's not really paying any attention to her. To have a relationship means you have some time where you're just paying attention to the other person. You're not doing anything else. I forget who, I think it was either John Adams or John Quincy Adams. You know, we've had two sets of presidents where one time the father was president, one time the son. Which of those was a son, John Adams or John Quincy Adams? Anybody?
John Quincy Adams.
John Quincy Adams. Okay, so he was one of 14 children. And he said that what his mother did was she set aside 1 hour a week for each of the children. Well, that was just her time with that child. And he had every Thursday afternoon from 6 to 7. And he said his whole life, Thursday afternoon from 6 to 7, was a really special time for him, long after his mother died. But the point is, she said, okay, this hour a week is going to be just for you. So one thing we do with our body is we say, my dear Lord, I'm going to spend hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours, every day just for you. I'm just going to be with you. I'm not going to do anything else during that time. I'm not going to check my email. I'm not going to talk to my friends. I'm not going to contemplate politics. I'm just going to be with you. So that's the idea, of course, of japa. And also reading the scriptures, worshiping the deity, all of these basic things we do. Krishna, I'm just going to be with you. I'm just going to focus on your name. I'm going to focus on your pastimes. I'm going to focus on your form. I'm going to give you my full attention without being distracted by anything else. All right, how else could we give our body to Krishna? Offering obeisances to Krishna and to the devotees. Hearing about Krishna instead of hearing the latest rock and roll song or about whatever, the latest politicians or movie stars.
Placing the body in auspicious places.
Putting your body in auspicious places. And, you know, really also spreading knowledge of Krishna. What Krishna wants most is to be reunited with his family. Any of us who right now are geographically separated from some family or friend that we really love, we can understand how wonderful it is if somebody made facility for us to be with that person again. If we had someone who came and said, you know, hey, I'll buy a plane ticket and I'll make this arrangement and that arrangement so you can again be with this person you love. How happy we would be, how grateful we would be. So Krishna's feeling some separation from the jivas, from the souls who are here in this material world. And if we can do something to unite, to have yoga between Krishna and those living entities, Krishna is very happy with that. And just like the soldiers, they're out sacrificing their bodies for the sake of freedom and peace in the world. That's the idea, whether or not that actually happens. That's the concept. Why can't we sacrifice our time also for preaching? It is a sacrifice. I mean, undoubtedly, to go and distribute prasadam, to go and distribute books, to Srila Prabhupada's books, to go out on the street and chant the holy name, it's a big sacrifice. Not only is it a sacrifice of our body, it's a sacrifice of our false ego, especially if we go out wearing funny clothes like this. Of course, Hawaii's pretty lenient as far as dress code. But, you know, to go out on the public street singing and dancing, generally in the West, people only do that if they're intoxicated. Okay? It's a little sacrifice of our false ego. It's not what respectable people in the West are supposed to be doing. I mean, my mother had a really hard time for many, many years. People say, so how's your daughter? What's she doing? Yeah, she's in the subway selling, you know, Hindu books. And she's out singing and dancing on the street wearing funny clothes. You know, it was really embarrassing for her. She didn't become favorable to my being in the Hare Krishna movement till we owned a house, a car, and I was running a school. And then she could finally say, yes, my daughter's running school instead of my daughter's out selling books on the streets. So that's quite a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice of our time. It's a sacrifice of our prestige. And, you know, you're out there selling books, and how many people out of 100 even stop and say hello? Maybe 5 or 10. And of those, many people just refuse, right? How many people actually take a book out of 100? 1, 2, 3. People may insult you. And there's so many ways to preach Krishna consciousness, to sacrifice our body like that. And how do we sacrifice our mind? Thinking about Krishna. What do we really think about most of the time? Food. Comfort for this body, which isn't even ourself. You know, I've read some stories of people who had like near-death experiences where their body had died and they went above their body, and some of them just look and think, oh, who's that funny looking guy there? He looks like he's really in bad shape. And as soon as we're out of this body, the chances are we won't even be attached to it anymore. Oh, that's a pretty sick looking old lady lying there on the bed. Really, that's quite common. But most of our thoughts are just for the comfort of this body. What am I going to eat? When am I going to eat? Is it going to be good? Am I going to get enough? Is it going to be something I like? Where am I going to sleep? Is the bed going to be comfortable? Am I going to be warm enough? Am I going to be cold enough? It's going to be too hot. It's going to be too cold. Am I going to wear comfortable clothes? Am I going to have enough money to buy the things I want? Are the things I want going to please me? Am I going to like my new stereo system? Is it going to sound nice? Are the people at work going to be nice to me? Are my family members going to be nice to me? Am I going to get hurt? Am I going to get an accident? Am I going to get sick? Am I going to be healthy? I mean, that's generally our constant meditation. Is this body going to be okay? Is it going to be okay? Is it going to be comfortable? Is it going to have some pleasure? Am I going to get some happiness for this body? Am I going to get some happiness for this body? Am I going to get some happiness for this mind? Am I going to get some... That's basically what we're thinking about 24 hours a day, even in our dreams. So to sacrifice our mind is to start thinking, is Krishna going to be happy? When's Krishna going to eat? What's Krishna going to eat? Is it going to be nice food? Is he going to enjoy it? Is it going to be cooked right? Is it going to have a variety of tastes? Is he going to be warm enough? Is he going to be cool enough? Is he going to be wearing nice flowers? Is he going to be wearing nice clothes? How is he going to be decorated? Is he going to have a nice place to sleep? Is his mission going to be fulfilled? What has Krishna been doing? Generally, again, we think about what we're doing, about what our friends are doing. What did I do yesterday? What am I going to do tomorrow? What did I do a week ago? What did I do a month ago? What's my story? What am I going to do in the future? Think, what has Krishna been doing? Did Krishna steal the butter and walk away with little, you know, butter-encrusted footprints? Did Mother Yasoda pick Krishna up to feed him? And she's, you know, she picks him up and she looks in his mouth and she sees, oh, my God, this whole universe. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't done anything that approaches that level of amazingness. So to spend our time thinking about Krishna and Krishna's devotees, about the Dichi who gives up his bones, about Bali Maharaj who gives up his body, about Dhruva who goes to the forest and meditates as a young boy, about Srila Prabhupada who came to America with practically no money at an old age, having heart attacks on the boat. Now, what's the ultimate sacrifice that we want to make for Krishna? We've got our body, our mind. That's the ultimate sacrifice. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's in the 15th chapter, one should know what one owns and what one doesn't own. Now, we've already talked about how I don't own this body. Right? Again, can Krishna take it away, like now, if he wants to? Any part of it, any function of it, or the whole thing? Could he do that right now to any of us? Okay, so he owns the body. Could he take away my ability to think and reason also? Like right now, if he wanted to? Pretty scary, huh? So he owns a body and he owns a mind. I don't own those things. So when I'm giving my body and mind to Krishna, I'm just acknowledging something, but there is something I own. Prabhupada says one should know what one owns and what one doesn't own. What do I own? So sacrificing body and mind is very good. One has to do that because I think that that's myself. But that's not the ultimate sacrifice because those are things I really never owned in the first place. All I'm sacrificing there is an illusion. But there is a real sacrifice. What do I own? Something I own that can never be taken away from me. My free will. I own my will. I own my desires. That I own eternally. That's mine. And that's the scariest thing to sacrifice. You know, there are a lot of religious people in this world who more or less sacrifice their bodies for God. Many. Millions and millions. And of all those, some of them also sacrifice their minds to God. But hardly any sacrifice their self. But what happens when you sacrifice your will? See, we're really afraid of sacrificing the one thing that I own, my will, to Krishna. Because in this world, if I sacrifice my will to someone else, they usually exploit me. They start to just want to use me as an extension of themselves. They want to subsume me. They want to, in a sense, devour me. So I'm afraid that it will be like that with Krishna. I'll lose myself. On the other hand, as I was saying, we have this pull, right, between selfishness and sacrifice. I'm afraid of losing myself, but at the same time, I kind of want to lose myself. I know one friend who's been disappointed in love, and he told me, he said, I wish I could find the girl for whom I could lose myself in love. Become mad in love. So when we surrender our will to Krishna, we do sort of lose ourselves in love, but our individuality actually manifests stronger. Something like when I offer food to Krishna, it comes back tasting better. They don't lose the food. I mean, sometimes Krishna plays tricks and eats some of it, actually it disappears from the plate. But usually that doesn't happen. Usually if you put 5 cauliflower pakoras on the plate, when you take the plate back, there's still 5 cauliflower pakoras. They just taste better. So when I give my will to Krishna, it comes back tasting better. I become more me. My real self manifests. I become fully free. As long as I try to hold on to my will, I'm an imprisoned being. What does Jesus say? Those who seek to keep their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will gain it. So this is it's counterintuitive for the conditioned soul. If I'm holding on to my own will, no, I'm going to use my will for what I want to do. And in fact, a lot of the reason we do sinful things is just to have a sense that I can do what I want to do. No one's going to tell me what to do. That's often our pleasure in sin. The sin itself doesn't have much pleasure. Pleasure comes from Krishna. As soon as you separate from Krishna, there's not much pleasure. So the sin itself is actually not very enjoyable. What's enjoyable is the sense of I can do what I want to do. I can make a choice. But that's a choice in bondage. It's like a choice in prison, you know. Do you want to eat the dry bread or the soup? And when I give my will to Krishna, I become free. And then I can really do whatever I want, because everything I want then becomes in harmony with Krishna and becomes good. And at the same time, I lose myself in love. So both are accomplished. I have the full sacrifice of giving with full reciprocation. Krishna is fully grateful. He's so grateful, he awards a little bit of chipped rice with a palace. He remembers even unknowing service someone does for him, unintentional service someone does for him. Someone does service for him without meaning to serve him, he remembers that and counts it as something. Whereas in this world, I do something for someone and they say, well, you just did it for selfish purposes. So even if I do, even I come to kill Krishna, I come to Krishna, he said, oh, you've come to me. Very nice. You become my mother. So when I give to Krishna, he fully reciprocates. He fully appreciates. He appreciates beyond what I'm giving. He takes what I'm giving as much more significant than what I've actually given. I get full appreciation. And I get full satisfaction because I'm part of him. And at the same time, I get to be fully giving to the point that I forget myself. I become fully satisfied and I forget myself simultaneously. So Krishna is the whole to whom we should sacrifice. It's very glorious. Indeed, we're not going to discount those who give their body for the country, or those who give their body for the family, or those who give their body for philanthropy. But if one is going to give, why not give to the best source? And it's those people who should really be glorified. We should really have a memorial day to memorialize those who've given body, mind, and their very self to the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. And actually, of course, we have many days throughout the year when we do that very thing, and we meditate on those persons and try to follow in their footsteps. So thank you very much. We have a few minutes. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. Wonderful. So, is it that we are most satisfied, and we get glimpses of this, I think this is what keeps me going sometimes. Is it that we most satisfied when we lose ourselves in Krishna, because that's when Krishna is also most satisfied, when he somehow loses himself.
Yes, Krishna loses himself in the love of the devotee, and the devotee loses himself in Krishna. But when you do that, you're more fully you than you are otherwise. That's the mystery. When you lose yourself in Krishna is when you become fully you.
And he's more fully him when he's Chaitanya?
Yes.
Because he does, that's when he's fully losing himself.
In self and love, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a very special place.
That it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Krishna also likes to lose himself in love. Not just with Radharani, with all of us also. He wants to lose himself in love with us. And I think Goswami says all the residents of the spiritual world think they're Krishna's favorite, and they're all right. That's his pleasure. Anybody else?
Could you give us, tell us where you're going next? Where you're going to lose yourself?
Where I'm going? Well, I'm going to go next here.
Oh, you're going to be here for a week.
I'm going to be here for a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my plan. I don't know what his plan is. he's interesting. We make our plans. My plan is to be here through Friday, and then from there I'll be going to New Zealand for 3 months to work on a curriculum project. I'm working on a project to teach children how to read with Krishna conscious stories and books. And then I'll probably be back here after that for a few hours in August. Unless I change the ticket. My plan right now is like I'd arrive at night and leave the next day at the end of August. And then I'll be in the Big Island and California for a week each, and then I'll be traveling through Europe and then probably India. I'm planning on going to India. Again, that's my plan. So now we have a good opportunity to surrender body, mind, and self. That is the essence of kirtan. So in kirtan, we're using our body to chant the holy name. We should be using our mind to be meditating on the essence of the meaning of the mantra. And the real thing that should be happening is that we're actually giving ourself, our will to the Lord, and saying, I want to reconnect with you in yoga. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.